These are the top stories. Iran's foreign minister says Washington's withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal and its unilateral sanctions have cost Iran $1 trillion. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency says the UN body has reached a deal with Iran to continue necessary verification and monitoring activities in the country. Also ahead, a new revelation shows the New York Police Department and the FBI were behind the killing of famed black activist Malcolm X in 1965. Welcome to the World News. Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, says the U.S. must lift sanctions if it wants to re-enter the 2015 nuclear deal. Zarif made the comment 2 days before Iran withdraws from the additional protocol in response to the U.S. sanctions and Europe's failure to abide by its commitments under the nuclear deal.
The clock is ticking as the Iranian government is preparing to implement a parliamentary law to cease the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The protocol calls for unannounced inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency of Iran's nuclear sites. Those snap inspections will now be suspended when the Iranian legislation comes into force Tuesday. The move is the latest step Iran has taken in response to the failure of the European signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal to fulfill their commitments. Iran had demanded the Europeans make up for the 2018 US withdrawal from the deal and its reimposition of sanctions. Iran's top diplomat said the law is in line with the nuclear agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA.
This is what we can do in accordance with paragraph 36 of the JCPOA, which enables Iran to take remedial action against failure by other members of the JCPOA to implement their obligations.
Zarif also slammed the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden for continuing the policy of sanctions against Iran.
The problem is, U.S. is addicted to sanctions. U.S. is addicted to pressure. U.S. is addicted to bullying.
And this is his stance over Washington's return to the JCPOA.
Well, the United States will not be able to rejoin the JCPOA before they remove the sanctions.
Zarif added that Iran will seek compensation after Washington rejoins the nuclear deal.
Commit, act, meet. First we need commitment. We haven't seen it. Then we need action, removal of sanctions. Then we will meet. When we meet, we will raise compensation. We have lost about $1,000 billion, $1 trillion, at least directly and indirectly, because of imposition of U.S. sanctions since 2018.
Crippling economic sanctions.
Zarif took a jab at the U.S. for its so-called maximum pressure campaign launched by former President Donald Trump. The Iranian foreign minister said the campaign targeting his country has been a failure. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told the BBC on Friday that the policy has produced no results. Now, it's up to the White House to go ahead with a failed policy or reverse course in dealing with Iran.
The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency says the UN body has reached a deal with Iran to continue necessary verification and monitoring activities in the country.
Basically, what we have agreed is the following. In the first place, we reconfirmed that Iran will continue to implement the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement without any limit, as they have been doing so far. In the second place, we agreed that in view of the law, and in particular the provision that establishes limitations, we reached a temporary bilateral technical understanding whereby the agency is going to continue its necessary verification and monitoring activities for a period of up to 3 months.
Rafael Grossi made the remarks in a news conference after returning from a trip to Tehran. He said the new deal was in line with a law passed by the Iranian parliament, which calls for reduction of cooperation with the IAEA.
There's one thing that needs to be clear, ladies and gentlemen. This law exists. This law is going to be applied, which means that the additional protocol, much to my regret, is going to be suspended. There is less access, let's face it, there is less access, but still we were able to retain the necessary degree of monitoring and verification work for what it is, as it's been defined, as you will see, as you read it again, as a temporary.
Grossi added that the temporary deal is useful and will salvage the situation for now. He added that the new agreement will be reviewed constantly and can be suspended or extended. The IAEA chief noted that there still would be the same number of inspectors as per the new deal, but there would be, quote, things we lose. We were earlier joined by our Vienna correspondent, Thomas Lesgi, who gave us more details about the new inspection agreement between the IAEA and Iran.
I think the gist of that statement that we heard Mr. Grossi speak about is that the IAEA has managed to retain its capacity to continue, in its own words, the necessary monitoring and verification activities up to a period of 3 months. But what does this mean? He didn't really go into the details, but I did get another statement a bit after that from the Iranian Atomic Energy Organization concerning this understanding between the two sides. And in that statement from the Iranian Atomic Energy Organization, it said that what is meant by the statement that the agency will be able to continue its monitoring and verification activities that are necessary is that Iran is going to record and retain information of certain activities and from certain monitoring equipment and keep that information to itself, and that the agency will not have any access to this information. It will solely stay with Iran. If after 3 months sanctions are lifted, then Iran will provide this information to the agency, and if not, then this information will be permanently deleted. Now, this is not something that Mr. Grossi said, but it was in a statement that I read and that was given out by the Iranian Atomic Energy Organizations.
A new report has revealed that Israel is expanding its Dimona nuclear complex, an operation that began sometime in 2018. Israel is known to be in possession of up to 400 nuclear warheads. That is something posing a tremendous risk to the region. All these come as Israel and its allies accuse Iran of secretly working to produce nuclear bombs. Iran has time and again dismissed the accusation.
Recently published satellite images by the International Panel on Fissile Material have revealed that Israel is expanding its Dimona nuclear facility in the Negev Desert. Israel has acknowledged the existence of the Dimona nuclear reactor, however it neither confirms nor denies the purpose of the facility. The site has provided the Israeli regime with the material needed for its nuclear arsenal, according to a report by a non-profit organization named Federation of American Scientists. In 2020, Israel possesses close to 100 atomic nuclear warheads that are made from plutonium produced in a Dimona heavy water reactor. However, other sources have put that figure at 300, with some estimates even going as far as 400 nuclear warheads. The Israeli regime has a deliberate ambiguity policy on its nuclear arsenal, which means despite being the only possessor of nuclear weapons in West Asia, it always refuses to accept or deny having any. Israel has always turned a deaf ear to international calls on nuclear transparency, and it has never allowed any inspections of its nuclear facilities. With the US's invariable support, the regime has so far defied the international calls to join the Non-Proliferation Treaty, or NPT. The treaty aims to halt the spread of nuclear arms and weapons technology. This is all while Israel has constantly accused the Islamic Republic of Iran of weaponization of its peaceful nuclear program and assassinated several nuclear scientists in recent years. However, Iran has rejected all these accusations, as it was among the first nations to sign the NPT. In January, Iran's permanent representative to Vienna-based international organizations, Kazem Gharibabadi, denounced favoritism towards Israel by the International Atomic Agency. He said such a treatment has given the Israeli regime the audacity to ridicule the watchdog and press ahead with its advancing nuclear weapons program in defiance of international calls. Israel's possession of nuclear warhead poses a significant threat to regional stability. The regime has carried out bombing campaigns against Syria for the past years. It's threatened Iran militarily on numerous occasions. And when it comes to Hezbollah, Israel has repeatedly threatened to destroy the resistance group.
First of all, they want to keep it as secret as possible, but there's another reason for this, and it's because Israel gets a large amount of economic and military aid from the United States. It's the biggest recipient of U.S. aid, and there is a bill that was passed, I guess, 60 years ago, the Symington Amendment, which said that we cannot provide aid to any nation that has a nuclear weapon and is not part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Even though Israel has acknowledged the existence of the Dimona nuclear reactor, it has neither confirmed nor denied the purpose of the facility. However, it is an open secret that manufacturing of nukes is part of what the facility does. Israel has reportedly been stealing nuclear secrets and covertly making bombs since the 1950s, and Western governments, including Britain and the U.S., have turned a blind eye to that. The tacit support of the U.S. and its allies to Israel's nuclear bomb making has created a dangerous precedent for the region. Saudi Arabia is now expanding the nuclear facility of its own and rejects any inspections of the site. The irony is that Iran has been accused of pursuing a secret program to produce nuclear bombs, while it has always backed efforts to have a region free from nukes.
Israel's name has been synonymous with aggression, illegal occupation, and war with regional countries, as well as other international crimes. In August 2018, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu threatened Iran with atomic annihilation, right from the regime's Dimona atomic weapons facility. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif slammed Netanyahu by calling his statement beyond shameless. The regime is the center of fabrications against Iran's peaceful nuclear energy program, which is subject to round-the-clock monitoring by the UN. Israel has made baseless allegations against Iran, saying it is developing nuclear weapons, yet the regime owns atomic warheads and refrains from allowing inspections of its facilities. Unlike Iran, Israel has so far refused to join the Non-Proliferation Treaty, whose aim is to prevent the spread of nuclear arms and weapons technology, in defiance of international pressure. Several countries have helped out Israel to develop its nuclear arsenal. They have secretly sold the Israeli regime material and expertise to build warheads. These nations include the US, France, Germany, Britain, and even Norway.
Well, you can draw the conclusion that perhaps the United States likes volatile regions. The more death and destruction, the better. It survives on this, and it invests extremely heavily in the most powerful military regime on the planet.
However, Israel's nuclear weapons project would never have succeeded without a major contribution from France. Surprisingly, Paris took the toughest line on counter-proliferation when it came to Iran's peaceful nuclear program, whilst at the same time it helped lay the foundations of the Israeli regime's atomic weapons. Whilst Israel has fabricated accusations against Iran's peaceful nuclear program, it's the only possessor of atomic warheads in the West Asia region. There have been growing calls for a region free of nuclear weapons. So why then have the US and Europe themselves turned a deaf ear to such demands?
On to another one of our headline stories. A new revelation indicates that the New York Police Department and the FBI were behind the 1965 killing of African-American Muslim leader Malcolm X. Members of Malcolm X's family have released a letter written by a deceased undercover NYPD police officer. The letter details how the officer's supervisors pressured him to lure two members of Malcolm X's security detail to commit crimes that led to their arrest. According to the contents of the letter, the arrest just days before the fatal shooting kept the security from guarding the door of a venue where Malcolm X was preparing to deliver a speech. The letter described the matter as a conspiracy by the FBI and NYPD to have Malcolm X killed. Three people were convicted in the shooting, but historians have long contended that the wrong men have been sentenced. We were earlier joined by our man in Washington, D.C., Wyatt Reed, who gave us some more details on the latest revelation about Malcolm X's assassination.
The Manhattan District Attorney's Office has said publicly that this investigation is ongoing. A sort of phenomenon, you know, characteristic of this trial that his family has long contended has really been more of a cover-up than an investigation. So, you know, really, I think this revelation in terms of the significance, it's pretty extraordinary. People in the United States have long known, for example, that the United States government was behind, for example, the assassination of Fred Hampton. A civil jury in 1999 found that the U.S. government was liable for the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is really sort of the first time that we have some real substantive evidence that shows that the New York Police Department, and indeed, according to the former undercover police officer, Woods, Raymond Woods, that according to him, the not just the New York Police Department, but the FBI was actually involved in this assassination.
Now, Brazil reports over 29,000 new COVID-19 cases, bringing the number of confirmed coronavirus infections in the Latin American country to nearly 10.2 million. Brazil's virus-related death toll also soared past 246,000, with 500 new fatalities reported for Sunday. The figures show a sharp decrease compared to Saturday, when the health ministry reported over 1,200 new deaths and around 57,000 cases. Meanwhile, protesters in Sao Paulo organized motorcades to demand the president to be impeached over his handling of the public health crisis. Brazil ranks second in the world in coronavirus deaths behind the U.S. Speaking of which, in America, the total number of fatalities is fast approaching the 500,000 mark. The country has also registered over 28.1 million cases. In Europe, clashes have erupted between security forces and Catalans that is protesting the imprisonment of singer Pablo Hasél. The violence broke out as the demonstrators rallied on the streets of Barcelona for the sixth consecutive night of protests. So far, several people have been injured and dozens detained since demonstrations began on February the 16th, when police arrested Hasél. The protests have also spread to other cities in the region, including the country's capital, Madrid. Hasél has been sentenced to 9 months in prison for insulting the monarchy, as well as glorifying terrorism. The arrest has sparked a debate on the freedom of expression in Spain. Now, opponents of Myanmar's military coup have called for a general strike and more street protests on Monday. The protesters say they will continue rallying until the country returns to a civilian government and the military releases the civilian leaders detained during the push. The call comes despite the anti-coup demonstrations in Myanmar becoming deadly. Three protesters have been killed and over 500 detained in the recent demonstrations. Myanmar has been the scene of street protests since the military seized power on February the 1st and arrested political leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi. Generals have failed to stop the protests, even with deploying more forces and promising to hold a new election. And finally, tens of thousands of farmers have gathered in India's northern Punjab state to protest against new agricultural reforms. Local sources say over 120,000 people attended the rally. That marks one of the largest demonstrations against new farm laws since they were approved in September. Union leaders have asked Indian farmers to gather outside the capital, New Delhi, next Saturday. Tens of thousands have already been camped there for nearly 3 months now. Farmers want the repeal of the laws they say will hurt them and benefit large corporations. The government says the legislation will help farmers get better prices. The two sides have held several rounds of talks, but no progress made.
diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
With hundreds of thousands of people still without power in Texas, some contending that they have no water coming out of their faucets at all, and others facing burst pipes leading to collapsed ceilings and other damage to their homes, the situation is dire for many Texans facing multiple problems at once. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Sharon Jung Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Texas Power Crisis Has Turned Into a Disaster That Parallels Hurricane Katrina. Stay tuned for the details. As many in Texas wake up still without power, millions are now also having to contend with water shutdowns, boil advisories, and empty grocery shelves, as cities struggle with keeping infrastructure powered and supply chains are interrupted. As of estimates performed on Wednesday, 7 million Texans were under a boil advisory. Since then, Austin has also issued a citywide water boil notice due to power loss at their biggest water treatment plant. Austin Water serves over a million customers, according to its website. With hundreds of thousands of people still without power in the state, some contending that they have no water coming out of their faucets at all, and others facing burst pipes leading to collapsed ceilings and other damage to their homes, this situation is dire for many Texans facing multiple problems at once. Even as some residents are getting their power restored, the problems are only continuing to layer as the only grocery stores left open were quickly selling out of food and supplies. As many without power watched their refrigerated food spoil, lines to get into stores wrapped around blocks and buildings, and store shelves sat completely empty with no indication of when new shipments would be coming in. Food banks have had to cancel deliveries and schools to halt meal distribution to students, the Texas Tribune reports. People experiencing homelessness, including a disproportionate number of black residents, have especially suffered in the record cold temperatures across the state. There have been some reports of people being found dead in the streets because of a lack of shelter. Businesses are shut down in Texas, streets are empty other than a few guys sliding around, and fire trucks rushing to rescue people who turn their ovens to keep warm and poison themselves with carbon monoxide, wrote Austin resident Jeff Goodell in Rolling Stone. Yesterday, the line at our neighborhood grocery store was three blocks long. people wandering around with handguns on their hibats to a sense of lawlessness. Texas is an open carry state. The Texas Agriculture Commissioner has said that farmers and ranchers are having to throw away millions of dollars worth of goods because of a lack of power. We're looking at a food supply chain problem like we've never seen before, even with COVID-19, he told one local news affiliate. An energy analyst likened the power crisis to the fallout of Hurricane Katrina, as it's becoming increasingly clear that the situation in Texas is a statewide disaster. As natural gas output declined dramatically in the state, Paul Sankey, who leads energy analyst firm Sankey Research, said on Bloomberg, "The situation to me is very reminiscent of Hurricane Katrina. We have never seen a loss of energy supply at this scale in midwinter. This is the biggest outage in the history of the United States oil and gas," Sankey said. Many others online echoed Sankey's words as Katrina trended on Twitter, saying that the situation is similar to the hurricane disaster, that it has been downplayed by politicians, but many may be uncovered to be even more serious in the coming weeks. Experts say that the power outages have partially been caused by the deregulation of the state's electric grid. The government, some say, favored deregulatory actions like not requiring electrical equipment upgrades or proper weatherization, instead relying on free market mechanisms that ultimately contributed to the current disaster. Former Governor Rick Perry faced criticism recently when he said that Texans would rather face the current disaster than have to be regulated by the federal government. And he's not the only Republican currently catching heat. Many have begun calling for resignation of Governor Greg Abbott for a failure of leadership. Recently, as millions suffered without power and under boil water advisories, the governor went on Fox to attack clean energy, which experts say was not a major contributor to the current crisis, and the Green New Deal.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and on the threshold of the birthday anniversary of Imam Muhammad al-Taghi al-Jawad, peace be upon him, the ninth infallible successor of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, let us hear what Imam Jawad said on hearing when some of the things destined for him did not reach him. Our souls and riches are among the pleasant gifts and the deposited loans of God, who makes us enjoy some of them pleasantly and delightedly, and takes away whatever he wills of rewards and merits. He whose intolerance overcomes his steadfastness will waste his rewards. God protect us against so. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mo'jiza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the life and times of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul. And on this program, I'd like to welcome my expert and guest, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi. I'd like to say salam to him and welcome him to the program, first of all. Salam, sir.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, I think on a previous session, we were talking about the fact that this is a spiritual thing when we say death to America, because many journalists and people who view this particular phenomenon since the early days of the revolution, say that they feel that a death to America is coming along any moment now, during the khutbah, during the speech at the Friday prayers. Tell me, you know, in terms of what Imam Khomeini said about America, and when we look at it, relations at the moment, 35 years on, where, you know, there are overtures, diplomatic overtures, between some kind of rapprochement between Iran and the U.S., but we still see that the positions are completely opposite to one another. We can't see how these two nations can, in any shape or form, come together. Your take, sir, I mean, I think I feel another death to America coming on personally as I sit here. give me your take on that, sir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Please feel free.
Thank you. Death to America. Because really, I mean, I'm at this moment in time, honestly, because of Syria and because of many other issues, even what happened at Guantanamo Bay to those poor individuals, who some of them were innocent, were lifted from Afghanistan and tortured horrendously in that
place. Some of them were kids.
And some of them were kids. They were innocent kids. I mean, I myself personally would be more happier to utter these three words, and you know, with the spiritual significance with which Imam Khomeini, may God bless his, because he doesn't say things for no reason, that this is the great Satan. He was seeing it.
That's what I'm. That's
yeah,
what I was
there's
say,
a fundamental nature to this particular creature, which we have to avoid.
I think Bismillah Rahman Rahim. Imam Khomeini said something much worse, or much heavier, or much more
deeper,
intense.
Yes.
Deeper.
In
than
wisdom.
Than death to America.
Yes.
He said America is the great Satan.
He said, absolutely.
That's worse.
That's worse.
That's more intense.
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
Right. So, you know, because you know, there's a lot of stuff being said these days, like, oh, you know, if you just don't say that, then, you know.
But
I think
Imam's
view of America was basically, as we've discussed in some programs previously, which is that you have a tawud, you have an entity which claims to be ruling and which claims to have sovereignty without God's permission.
Exactly.
Okay.
This is the fundamental point.
Now, it could
point.
Be
this tawud, is the Quranic point.
Right.
Yes.
And then, you know, it sources it out. It has its local little tawuds, like the Shah during the time.
Yes.
And, you know, who can't go to the bathroom without asking America's permission.
Permission, yes.
You know.
He needed it in writing.
So, and again, and tawud is a Quranic concept.
Yes.
It's not something that Imam made up. It's
not something
the Muslims have just made up.
No.
It's
no.
in the Quran
it's
in the
Quran.
Sense that it says that, you know, don't follow the tawud. Don't follow those who... without permission of God, without any credibility, without
any legitimacy,
exactly, are claiming to be, you know, God's savior and, you know, the chosen people and those who will, you know, bring peace and prosperity and happiness and justice and the American way to the rest of the world, okay?
Absolutely.
So, Imam's animosity, enmity, confrontation with the U.S. was with the essence of what they are.
Yes.
Okay. It has nothing to do with specifically America, you know,
doing this or doing that.
Right. As a historical entity.
Yeah. Or some kind of, you know, erroneous policy that they had in foreign relations.
If the Soviets were claiming the same thing, he would say the same thing.
Exactly.
If the Chinese were claiming the same thing, he would
say the
same
thing
about
them.
If the Indians were claiming the same thing, he would say the same thing. If the French were claiming the same thing, he would say the same thing about them.
Sure.
So it's about Imam's enmity is not simply a historic one rooted in the troubled history between Iran and the U.S.
and the U.S.
and the way the U.S. supported the most vile people as rulers and as torturers and as executioners in this country.
In this country of the
you know,
Islamic
killing
Republic, yes.
our, you know, this is not some theoretical matter.
No, this
when happened. when you have America supporting, you know, a dictator, a brutal dictator, a security service, which you know. Just executes, tortures, imprisons people
anything
at will.
Anything that they had to say about the monarch.
These are actually people's fathers, uncles, brothers, cousins, yourself, even mothers, even sisters. So it's not some theoretical thing. It's a real thing on a daily basis. We know what the Americans did.
Mm.
You know, you can't forget about that. You can't just say, oh, well, you know, it was and they still do it.
Yes.
Like you were saying. Mm. It's not like they've changed. It's not like they made a mistake and they said, well, sorry about that.
No, they wouldn't
you
even
know, we're not gonna have secret CIA prisons anymore.
No.
We're not gonna have, you know, Guantanamo, you know, people being picked up from places randomly and dropped into a little enclave in Cuba so that nobody can claim that you brought them to U.S. soil.
Sure.
You know?
No, but
it's not like that the U.S. has stopped doing these things.
No.
It's not like that the U.S. has stopped, you know, having massive surveillance and, you know, spying on every, you know, cockroach that you know, walks the earth.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, why would we want to forget about all that?
Exactly. And why would you want to forget the fact that it was the U.S. and, of course, the what we call the cannibal allies now, the Takfiris of the, you know, Saudi persuasion, which we see now occurring 35 years on. But at that time, they were supporting a brutal dictator in Iraq and imposed an 8-year war.
Right. And
supplying him with chemical weapons.
Right. So these are things that, you know, we can't suddenly say, you know, why would Imam say this about anyone or any nation?
Exactly.
Because they deserve it.
They deserve that, yes. Because they fundamentally in nature and characteristic have not changed.
Right. Yeah. Now, this is a problem we have in Iran with certain people because they are genetically predisposed to think that if we have quote unquote good relations, you know, then everything is going to
be somehow rosy.
Right. Then we will have paradise on earth, you know. And this is a deep issue. This is not, you know what I mean? This is a deep spiritual disease.
The disease, I think so.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's not simply a miscalculation or a lack of, you know, proper understanding of the realities of international relations or an ignorance of U.S. history. It's all that, okay? It's all that,
it's
what
all
I just
that.
Mentioned.
Yes.
But the root of it, the cause, the real cause of it is a deep spiritual disease, thinking that if you just hook up with the biggest, you know,
devil on the
godfather that is, you know, mafia don that's running things, then you will be okay. Just don't let the don, you know, kill you.
Exactly.
If you've got the don running the neighborhood, don't stand up to the don. Right?
Quite.
And this is a disease.
It is.
It's the disease that, you know, Imam Hussein went to Karbala to fight.
Exactly.
You know, just don't mess with Muawiyah.
Put,
don't mess with Yazid.
Ah.
Okay?
Yeah, keep quiet.
Keep quiet. Just do your thing.
Do your thing.
Right.
But don't say anything
go
to the Go
kiss the hand and the ring when you have to.
Yes.
And, you know,
make
if you can get out of it, if you can get something good out of it, good. If not, he will crush you.
He will crush you.
And this comes from a lack of belief. I'm talking about real.
Yes.
Real belief, not just something you
superficially
utter with your tongue or, you know, I've read the Quran, I believe in God.
Yes.
It's believing that God actually is the
true
active
sovereign.
Live agent in one's life.
Life, yes.
As opposed to, you know, he created billions of years ago, and now he's sitting on the side.
Side, yes.
Giving it, you know, let the Americans do. Okay? This is, and let me be very open about this.
Yes.
And some people are not going to like this. It's a form of shirk.
Very beautifully
it's,
put,
it's they're mushrik.
Very
and we even have this in our in theology.
We do.
We have, you know, tohide zati. Mm. We have essential tawhid, which relates to the, you know, the existence of God. So we say, you know, there's only one God. And, you know, most people, because they can't really fathom it on a deeper level, they say, of course, you know, we don't have multiple gods.
No.
Right? Then we have...
But they're talking
then
in terms
of numbers. Then
we have
tawhid sifati, which is relates to sifat, which relates to the characteristics and the names of God.
Yes.
That, you know, even though there's different names of God, they are not in conflict with each other. This is what we talked about in the previous program.
Sure.
We said, you know, the vengeance and, you know, the justice is within his rahmah. So
yes.
These are not separate from each other.
No.
Okay? Now, and then we have, you know, this is where the people have a problem, which is, you know, it's called Tawhid al-Rububiyyah, in his Rab, him being the Lord.
Lord.
The actual Lord that does the things.
Yes, the sovereign
it's
Lord.
It's not simply some, you know, old man with a white beard in the sky.
Unfortunately,
you know.
Still with that
this,
kind of image.
This is where most of us become mushrik.
Mushrik.
And I'm talking about people who pray and fast and read the
yes,
Quran and,
exactly.
You know, are
because,
good Muslims.
Because I wanted to point out very quickly from the Holy Quran, especially this example is very, very crucial if you really want to believe as a Muslim, as someone who has submitted and surrendered himself to the sovereign Lord, is Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam.
Right.
Because he's the Hanif. He's the one who understood the ultimate reality, the ultimate sense of who his Lord actually is. And once you have that picture that this is the one who watches me, cares for me, provides for my provision, my sustenance, my life or my death, this is the reality on which we are weak. Are we not?
Let me give you an example,
please.
I'm assuming that we're going to get to the point in these so-called negotiations with the U.S., where the U.S. is going to say, we want this from you.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranians are going to say, we want this from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
Mutually
sure.
Wanting things.
Mutually, yeah.
Right? And you're not. Neither side is going to be able to deliver what the other side wants.
Exactly.
For many reasons.
Yes,
whether
of
it's related to domestic issues at home, whether the Congress, whether it's related to, you know, Iran having its red lines in terms of its sovereignty and you know, its national dignity.
Sure.
We're going to get to a point in these negotiations. And, you know, they're giving themselves 6 to 9 months. I think it's, you know, maybe a year. They're going to get to a point where they're like, you know what, we can't do this. And then the Americans are going to go on TV and they're like, it was the Iranians' fault.
Their fault.
The people here in Iran who are, you know, dying to be, you know, Americans, you know, even though they look like monkeys when they imitate them. But anyways, they like to be American monkeys.
Sure.
Those in Iran will, you know, start writing their articles and their news, you know, they're going to go on and say, oh, you know, Iranians didn't you know, play ball.
But play ball, yes. Right. They'll blame fellow right. Iranians.
Iranians,
yes.
Iranian officials are going to be like, no, the Americans were making outlandish demands. We couldn't give in to those demands. We wanted things from them. They weren't willing to do one single thing.
Sure.
So this whole thing is going to be over in a year.
Yeah, I think
okay?
so. Okay? I think so.
And we're going to go back to the way it was in terms of, you know, people understanding what the realities are. Mm. Okay? Mm. The problem is that, you know, certain people, I'm talking about Muslims,
mm.
they don't understand that, let's assume that this happens, that everything falls apart, and the Iranian officials are steadfast, saying, you know what, we're not going to submit to this, even though there might be pressure from the sanctions, even though there's going to be, you know, price issues
sure.
and inflation
sure.
and so on.
Absolutely.
We're not going to go begging to the Taghut. We're not going to go begging to the Zalim.
Exactly.
To the oppressor, yeah. right? And imagine if this happens, and then God suddenly turns the whole thing around.
Ah, because that's something that does happen.
Because that's what he tells you. He says in the Quran, he says, you know, you're Shaitan, you know, threatens you and scares you with
poverty
and corruption.
Corruption.
And izzat is from me.
Me.
And I give you, and honor. I promise you honor and izzat and dignity.
Yes.
Okay. Now, wouldn't it be nice mm-hmm. if some of these people in Iran would actually think about what God is telling them?
Exactly.
And didn't we see it happening in these years? Wherever we stood up mm-hmm. for Islam,
yes.
we followed what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was telling us in the Quran, and what the Prophet was telling us, and what the Ayman were telling us. When we did that, we were successful. You know, there's Ali Qarati, who's famous in Iran. I'm sure you've seen him, you know,
sure,
on
yes.
TV. You know, he's the one that did the whole literacy campaign after the revolution, you know. And he says, don't say America when you're not doing well. Don't say it's America. Say Israf. Say that you've been wasteful. Because when
Very
you're wasteful,
nice.
Allah takes away the things that He's giving you. So we have a society when people are wasteful,
mm.
they don't, you know, thank God for the blessings that they have. They don't reflect on what happened, you know, 2 days ago in their life.
Yes.
When Allah honored them with, you know, the way they were trying to go on that path of Quran, and where they failed, and they were in misery when they were groveling at the feet of some you know lords, you know, quote unquote, other than God.
Mm.
So what do you think is going to happen? If you go with God, not only is it a promise in the Quran, but
yeah.
our life in these years has shown this.
Yes.
Okay.
And you're an independent sovereign nation in these years.
All the sanctions, and look, in terms of, you know.
And the world acknowledges that.
In terms of knowledge and create, you know.
Creativity, innovation.
And innovation. And in terms of, you know,
technological
standard of living.
Progress and
I mean,
advance.
Look at the standard of living. If you compare it to 40 years ago, it's not comparable.
It's not comparable.
You know,
it's
a whole different world.
No,
you know, you had a situation, a country where people were peasants, where they were illiterate.
Yes.
And now it's like, you know, everybody's got, you know, their mobile, everybody's got, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Everything that, you know, you would expect a normal average
I think
person in the West to have.
To be honest, I have been to Tehran and I sometimes think that people have a better standard of living than many people in European nations, and I
exactly
know
like we talked about.
Yeah,
you
from
know?
Personal experience,
you know,
I can see that
an average person mm. in Iran, even mm. though there's you know high
oh,
prices,
a lot of difficulty, the
right?
high prices. Yes,
but on the average person, mm. the middle class person in Iran has a better quality of life
yeah.
than an average person in you know
in Europe.
Pick a city,
Athens.
No, I'm talking about even, you know...
Yeah, in Birmingham.
London.
Birmingham,
you know,
anywhere,
Liverpool.
Yeah, Manchester.
You know?
I'm going to say Hull.
Glasgow.
Glasgow's a bit better.
Right.
Hull's one of the worst places
right?
in Britain.
Or yeah. some place in France or
yeah.
in Germany.
Yeah.
So the point is mm. that Imam, when he starts saying these
things,
he says
yes.
it's the great Satan,
mm.
when he says they are the root of all problems in the world, and
well,
he said this...
That's right. The root of all problems in this world. Exactly. Yeah.
You had Bush and Condi Rice and those guys
yeah, yeah,
deciding,
well,
you know what? Because at that time, mm. Bandar, our old friend.
Oh, yeah, Bandar.
He
yeah.
had left as ambassador of the U.S. and
sure.
his half-brother, I think it was Faisal or well, Turkey
whatever,
or one
whatever.
Of them.
Turk. Yeah,
Turkey or
Turkey,
Faisal
yeah,
or one of them.
Right, I remember that.
Right? Had come mm. as the new ambassador.
The new ambassador.
Okay, and he was a little bit more moderate, and a little bit more worldly,
mm.
and a little bit more, you know, diplomatic.
Mm.
And he basically said to the Americans, and the Americans, and together, they decided, you know what, with this whole Iraq thing happening, with this whole Afghanistan thing happening, it would be good if we tried to be a little, you know, a little rapprochement with Iran wouldn't hurt us.
Wouldn't hurt us.
Right?
Yeah.
With this whole Israel under attack, and, you know, Hezbollah, and all that. Let's, you know, in... let's see what we can do here.
Yeah.
To this level, we're not talking about a real opening. Yeah, yeah, we're talking about, let's take away this hostility, this rhetoric a little, let's step it back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure the Saudis were like, well, we can be, you know, we can mediate. Whatever.
Mediate, yes, yes.
Okay, so this is the Saudi ambassador in Washington saying this.
Yes.
Bandar gets a whiff of it back in Riyadh. Gets on his private jet, flies straight to Andrews Air Force Base, gets off the plane, goes to Condi and says, you can't do this. What do you mean, friends with Iran? Are you nuts? Right? What do you mean, rapprochement? What do you mean, you know?
Well, I'll give it to Bandar. At least he understands that aspect of everything.
Listen, it was so bad, it was so bad that, whatever, Faisal Turki, whoever it was, he resigned as an ambassador. He said, I'm the ambassador.
Yeah.
What are you flying over
here
for?
Exactly.
And once he realized that it's not, you know, there's issues, namely that, you know, the Israelis and the Saudis,
are
Bandar and Bibi. Bandar
I'm
and
not going to allow.
That's good. We got to get it.
Yeah, Bandar and Bibi, yeah.
Bibi, Bandar.
It sounds like, you know, the Bush-Blair Corporation, BBC, but there we are. It's very good. Yes,
right?
Bandar and Bibi.
Had decided, you know, that, you know what, we need to, you know, whatever, cripple Iran or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, who cares what Faisal Turki...
But I
so he resigned. He was ambassador 15
sure,
months,
sure.
less than you know, a little bit more than a year. After a while, he's like, you know what, I'm out of here, because this is I can't work like this. I'm discussing things, and then this guy flies in. What I'm trying to explain is that this is nothing new.
No,
we had this during the Bush era, you know, Bandar came and said, you know,
canceled
all options on the table.
Sure.
And as you know, usual, Condi and you know George and Donald and Dick.
Yes,
no.
Donald Dick, yes, that's right. It makes a whole difference from Donald Duck, yes, but we're talking about the same kind of politics, aren't
exactly.
we? Yes,
all right. Of them saluted, yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, and
yes.
you know,
as Donald Duck would.
You know, Bandar was threatening them. You know,
yes,
he wasn't asking.
Yeah, yeah.
He was saying,
no,
you know what, we'll just go give our oil to
the
Chinese, forget about dollar denomination
sure.
of oil, forget about allowing your ships access. You know, we're going to play you, like we always do.
Do.
Crudely and openly and hard-fisted and ham-fisted.
Yes.
Okay?
Sure.
And they all said, you know what? You know, sorry. Sorry for mentioning.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, fast forward to this.
This, yes.
You know,
yeah.
You know, Mr. Zarif does his thing, talking, you know, smiling, you know, negotiation.
Sure.
And what happens? Who flies in? Last time it was Bandar. This time it was
Bibi.
Bibi. All right? Flies in.
Flies in. And dictates to...
And says to...
Yeah.
You know,
Obama. Let's
Hussein.
Not have any of this.
And remember, his name is Hussein, right?
Yes.
To Hussein.
Yeah, to Hussein. We're not having any of this. Tighten the sanctions.
This is a, you know, a wolf in sheep's clothing. This
yeah.
is all lies.
Yes.
The Iranians are liars. They're genetically liars.
Yes.
It's all lies.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Very racist.
Oh, he
way.
Is.
By
he
the
is
way,
is
just very kind of crude.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, imagine saying these generalities about Jews. Imagine what...
Uh-huh,
crazy
yes.
thing
oh
would happen in the
goodness,
world.
The media would have a
you know,
field day.
If Alay Zarif or Alay
yes,
Rouhani would go in and be like, you know, the Jews can't be trusted because they always, you know, look after,
yeah, and
they're
then
always looking out for number one. You know, if somebody were to say, oh, the Jews always looking out for number one, always playing everyone, how dare anybody even say that, right?
Yes.
And I don't believe that that's the case with all Jews, but hey, somebody could look at history and say this is something they do.
Do, yeah.
Now imagine somebody saying that, no, but... Bibi is allowed to come and say every insult
to Iran,
to Iranians.
Yes,
and you know their character,
say all those lies,
all those things that they have to. Oh, they're lying. You know, the religious leader is lying about not wanting atomic weapons. This is all a ruse. This is all, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Okay. And what does Hussein do? All up to
the all back on the table.
Don't worry about it.
We will
get all we need to get out of Iran.
Sure.
Okay. So. This is who we're dealing with. This is why the Supreme Leader said, you know, we have nothing against people talking to each other,
sure.
but you have to remember who the party on the other side is.
Yes.
You shouldn't forget who they are.
Who they are.
Okay?
Exactly.
And some people, unfortunately, in Iran...
Still don't get that.
And in the Islamic world, still don't understand
Stand
who
that.
America is.
Sure.
They still have goodwill to them.
Sure.
They still think... And this, to me, is not evidence of their goodness, the people who have this in their heart.
Sure.
Is not evidence that they're good people.
No.
It's evidence that they are ignorant, that they have a disease in their heart.
Heart, yes.
That they have a flaw in their character.
If you don't mind me saying, Dr. Madhuchat, because, you know, in the last couple of minutes,
I think Egypt's a wonderful example of what's exactly happening at the moment. They tried to be everything to everyone, especially to the U.S., and what happens? They get hijacked. And this is exactly the sort of thing that, thank God, with the leadership of Imam Khomeini, because this program is dedicated to the man who changed the world. Really, I mean, all my hat goes off to him every time that, you know, really this man was remarkable. That, you know, he had that foresight, that, you know, that vision, that he saw exactly things for what they were. And, you know, he clarified it for us. And this is why you've survived these 35 years. And God willing, if you carry on like that, and I love the fact that Bibi keeps doing that thing where he says, oh, we're a moment away by tightening the sanctions. Yes, we are a moment away by becoming even more independent and more stronger than we've ever been before.
And look, who is the crazy one now?
Yeah, who's the crazy one now?
Who's the one that everybody's making fun of?
Sure.
Who is the one they're like,
yeah,
the
people are laughing
crazy.
Him out of the room.
Right? It's, look, just think about the people that Americans and the British elites have, you know, allied themselves
so
with.
Exactly.
It's, you know, animals,
Bandar and Bibi
animals
show.
Like Bandar and Bibi.
Bandar and Bibi show.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, of all the people in the world
for goodness sake.
You're going to be allied with,
yeah.
Of all the people you're going to allow them to fly in their private jet into Andrews Furs and come to you privately.
Yeah.
And
you're
getting Bandar to come? Who, you know, is funding the people who chop off heads with kitchen knives?
That's right. Christian priests who had their heads hacked off.
People
with
who,
saws?
Yeah, who like
yeah.
They cut open the chests and take out hearts
and put them in.
And he likes it. Believe he likes it.
Oh, yeah.
Don't think he's like revolted by it. I'm holding my nose.
No.
He's like, go do this.
Go and do this.
Because this will show our power, and this will show how, you know,
yeah, how,
you
yeah.
can't mess with us. You
yes,
know.
Exactly.
And then Bibi, I like to call him, you know, Bibi Smuts.
Yeah.
You know, like Jan Smuts wasn't that bad. You know, Bota, Bibi
yeah.
Bota, you know?
Yeah. Bibi Bota.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, who just hangs in there with apartheid. You know, the whole world is
yeah.
like, dude, you know, chill out on this. You know, separate roads,
yes.
you know, for Palestinians and for Jews,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And no, he's like, no, that's it. We're sticking to this, you know? So these are the people that Western elites have allied themselves with. And the question for us.
Yes.
And the issue that we have to think about,
sure.
and the issue that our listeners should, in my view,
yes,
consider and reflect on,
yes.
is not that you have animals like Bibi and Bandar in the world.
No.
They've always existed.
They've always existed.
They've always done these things.
Yes.
The issue is, why would those people who are the elites, who are, you know, from your homes and your families and your colleges and your towns and your churches and your synagogues
mm-hmm.
and your, you know, mosques, Why would these people who, you know, they're your cousins, they're your dads, your uncles, your, you know, brothers, your husbands, your wives, why would they even look at these people like Bibi and Bandar and consider them even worthy of their
attention?
Right. Where there's other people that they could be, you know, a nice, civilized, educated person.
Yes.
Okay? So the point I'm trying to simply make is, you know, why wouldn't you want to have good relations with a country like Iran, that is a republic,
sure.
that has elections, that has, you know, a deep, you know, complex structure where people are involved, where you have local elections, where you have 800,000, you know, people in this population running for.
Well, I think
that you have a leader who talks about, you know, progress and standard of living and, you know, healthcare and education and technology and, you know, the main thing in life being that you have more knowledge.
And
why would you not align yourself with that and align yourself with Bandar?
Well, I think the other thing is that, you know, honestly, that the, you know, we come back to that NAM summit as well. I think that in itself said everything, that, you know, the majority of nations in this world are tired of this hegemony and they really do want to ally themselves with Iran. And, you know, wanting to make broader ties and expand ties and, you know, to learn about this Islamic civilization as well, as we've discussed before. And it just leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you very much for listening.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.